that's why I'm a Klansman and wear a Klansman's mask.
What's normally referred to as the Second Klan gets refounded in 1915.
Dr. Felix Harcourt is a professor of history at Austin College and the author of Ku Klux Culture, a historical study of the rise in the 1920s of what's called the Second Klan, which exploded nationwide thanks in part to the media.
The New York World ran a 3-week front page expose of the Klan in 1921. Daily denunciations of its ideology, of its hooded secrecy and its propensity to violence. They ultimately spark a congressional hearing into the Klan's growing power. By some estimates, it boosts the world's circulation by over 100,000 readers. But the Klan's gain is in the hundreds of thousands of new members, reportedly cutting out membership applications from the New York World stores to join this organization that they were just now hearing about.
Wait, so they're saying, here is the Klan's secret membership application form. Isn't it terrible that this is what hate looks like? And people cut that out of their newspapers and say, I'm going to join.
Indeed, yes.
How aware was the Klan of the media context it was operating in?
Very aware. They know that certain kinds of events are going to draw more press attention, which is why you see events with the largest fiery cross in the United States, or the fleet of aeroplanes with electric crosses hanging from underneath. There really is this emphasis on showmanship.
How did the debates over the media coverage play out initially and then change?
Early on, the tendency is to follow the New York World model of hyperbolic denunciation. Increasingly, though, the Klan wields very effective methods of regulating the kinds of coverage it receives. Sometimes they would use physical threats. The editors of The Messenger received a severed hand in the mail. But more often, because they grew in power and influence, they were able to wield the boycott as a very, very effective tool, and advertising.
And did that focus on advertising dollars pay off?
Almost certainly. You see very widely circulated advertisements claiming this is the truth about the Klan, don't listen to what the press is saying. And a lot of particularly white mainstream dailies are increasingly aware that the way to benefit is to cover the Klan in a fairly neutral light, presenting the Klan normalized and sanitized as controversial, yes, but a widely accepted organization.
So what groups and communities are contesting the way that they're portrayed in the media?
Catholic, Jewish, and black newspapers all pushed back. Some in the black press think that the best thing to do is to deny the Klan any publicity whatsoever, what was referred to at the time as dignified silence. Other papers argue that there needs to be a far more active press campaign to try to combat this idea that was being peddled in mainstream white newspapers that while the Klan was controversial, it was successful. So rather than presenting the story of a popular day at the Texas State Fair dedicated to the Klan, for example, a publication like the Pittsburgh Courier would instead focus on Klan rallies that descended into violence and riots.
Was humor or mockery used by any journalists as a method of combating the Klan?
You see a lot of political cartoons and humorists like Ringed Lardner lampooning the Klan. But one of the most prominent journalists and theater critics of the time noted that the Klan could prosper in a cloud of custard pies. This mockery was satisfying to a certain segment of the readership, but that it wasn't really having any effect on Klan membership. Quite often, Klan members and Klan sympathizers saw those criticisms as evidence of having earned the right enemies.
You had said that eventually the Klan moved beyond even favorable mainstream press coverage and made their own outlets.
The national leadership create their own newspaper syndicate called the Courier, with a K. It was a really valuable form of propaganda that used local news, but also brought in national news and presented all of it through this clannish ideological lens.
What kind of stories would run in a Klan paper?
This is meant to be a family publication, so you would have a lengthy denunciation of Catholic influence in America, and on the next page, a recipe for pimento toast. A page for young readers with jokes, crosswords, and puzzles, ridiculously called the Fiery Crossword.
You've been describing an ascendant organization running its own newspaper, an explosion in membership. What happened? Why didn't it last?
There is kind of a standard narrative that says outside pressure, and particularly the scandal revolving around one of the major Klan leaders in Indiana who sexually assaults a woman who then kills herself, that these scandals ultimately discredit the Klan and leads to their collapse. Alternatively, there are arguments that after the 1924 Immigration Act is passed, the Klan has to some extent lost its reason for being and kind of dissolves back into the ether. These traditional narratives are problematic, though, because none of them really deal with the fact that while the Klan as an organization goes away, the Klan as movement remains entirely present, because the millions of members and the millions of sympathizers don't suddenly change their minds about their beliefs.
What effect did the debate over the Klan and the coverage of the Klan in the 20s have on the media going forward? Did their approaches to this kind of story change?
It's kind of a sad story. There were crusading newspapers through the 20s who took bold stances against the Klan. But the fact that a number of these papers had been awarded Pulitzer Prizes allowed the press, by really the 1930s onwards, to look back and congratulate themselves on having defeated the Klan, even if those bold stances ultimately were not very effective in combating the Klan.
So newspapers looked back and they saw their Pulitzer Prize-winning investigations, and they ignored the fact that coverage had in fact grown the Klan's membership.
Yes, very much so. The reality of the relationship between the Klan and the press in the 20s was really a relationship of mutual exploitation more than anything.
Thank you so much, Dr. Harcourt.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Felix Harcourt is a professor of history at Austin College and the author of Ku Klux Culture. Coming up, how much does who you are affect how you're able to cover white supremacists? This is On the Media.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.